You're listening to China Africa Talk.
Jambo, ni Bridget akikuletea kipindi kinachohusiana na China na Afrika.
Vous écoutez le dialogue sino-africain avec Bridget.
Everything China, everything Africa.
Olá, você está ouvindo China Africa Talk com Bridget.
سيدتي وسادتي مرحبا بكم في الحوار الصيني العربي مع بريتشيت.
Welcome back to the program. You're listening to China Africa Talk. I'm your host, Bridget Mutambirwa, coming to you from the Chinese capital in Beijing with more discussions on what's happening with China and Africa from a Chinese and African perspective. As part of the efforts to implement the outcomes of the 2024 Summit of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, the fourth China-Africa Future Leaders Dialogue has been held in central China's Hubei province. Under the theme Partners Working Hand in Hand for Modernization, the event has brought together youth representatives from 14 African countries, offering them a unique opportunity to witness China's modernization journey and engage with their Chinese counterparts. I had the privilege of joining the group where I explored China's efforts and achievements in green development, poverty alleviation, and rural revitalization efforts, and so much more. Some of my favorite picks include the visit to the largest hydropower station in the world, the Three Gorges Project, and a tour and test drive at a new energy vehicle plant. Why is it important for future leaders from China and Africa to understand each other through such platforms, and what tools can they apply from this year's session to their home countries? I'm now joined by three young African delegates who participated in the event. Guys, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Okay, perhaps we'll start by telling us what your names are and what your goal is aligned to the fourth session of the China-Africa Future Leaders Dialogue.
Okay, I'm Eric and I'm from Zimbabwe. I'm currently doing my PhD in International Affairs and Global Governance at Zhejiang University. The goal is to learn, to explore, and to try and take those experiences that I get here and share with my fellow African young people. And also during the process, I'm here to engage with the Chinese youth because it's a dialogue. I also want to share with them, to let them at least have a little bit of an appreciation of what is happening on the African continent, what is happening in Zimbabwe, that is socio-economic development or even the cultural aspect of it, how things are happening in Africa. So that's actually basically the goal that I have whilst being here.
Okay, Pearl.
My name is Pearl Chunga. I work at the Zambian Embassy as First Secretary. My goal regarding the program, I think coming from a country where over 60% of our population is a youthful population, it's imperative that whenever we talk about development, we have to include the youth. It's not possible to talk about African development. It's not possible to talk about Zambian development without talking about the youth. So having just come out of FOCAC in September this year, I think it's important that we include the young people in the FOCAC agenda. And even as we achieve the goals and the outcomes of FOCAC that our leaders set, it's important that the young people are included in these discussions and we are on the same page as our leaders.
And Reginald.
Thank you. I'm Tsani Reginald Lepodisa. I come from a village called Sikwani in Leribe, Lesotho. And so I'm a PhD candidate as well in comparative education. I'm more passionate about vocational education because of skills. I believe that's a pathway for industrial development and employment for young people. And it's part of the 10 action plans that are on this year's FOCAC. So part of my journey being here is to start to gather some of the experiences that China has gone through in uplifting people out of poverty, and therefore what sort of strategies they have used to upskill their people, especially in rural communities. That's very important for youth employment in Lesotho because that's the heaviest burden we have. And so that's about learning, just as my colleagues Pearl and Erica said.
Okay, and back to you, Eric. I saw you, we were together during this four-day program. I noticed you were very active and you represented the African youth that were here. Do you mind telling us why future leaders from China and Africa should understand each other, especially on such platforms?
Well, you know, we know that China is actually the largest developing country, and the African continent is the host to the largest number of developing countries. So if we are combining Africa and China, we make a very huge percentage of the global population, and also even in terms of diversity of cultures. So now we are at a point where China has had a lot in terms of modernization, its development, and we are trying to learn the experiences. If we are really going to try and look some of the consensus or some of the, you know, sharings that were coming from African leaders during the FOCAC, they were all saying that there are a lot of lessons that we can get from China, right? So now that means that we are actually already in the process of trying to learn from China. So in this process, we should not leave it only at state level. Now, us as the young people, we should now chip in, because the relations are really perfect at state level, China and African countries. But what are we doing at people-to-people level? What are we doing at youth level? So we are part and parcel of these people-to-people exchanges, and which is actually one of the top 10 partnership actions that were listed during this FOCAC. So that means that we have a very critical role to play. And I always say this, development starts with understanding one another.
Yes.
If we want to attract investment from Chinese investors back home, they first have to understand Africa from a cultural perspective. It is after they have that appreciation, they will have goals of actually really going into the African continent. Similarly, we are coming to China in numbers. China is already the second most popular destination for African students. We cannot just come here and stay in our universities after we are done, we go back, without really understanding the society. So I'm saying it is really important for youth from both sides to understand one another and to foster development.
Yes, development requires people.
Right.
And Africa has got a ton of young people. This exchanges between us and our fellow compatriots here, it gives us a unique opportunity to share the skills, the skill set required to put these action plans into implementation. I think you and I, we know that in Africa, we're pretty good at drafting policies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But driving implementation to a point where this plans become a reality, they benefit people. President Xi Jinping, when he was at FOCAC, one of the hallmarks he touched on was the development has to be human-centered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty important for us that in these exchanges that we undertake, we make sure that people development are at the center of implementing the current action plans. And so engaging with young people who are the largest demographic dividend that we have is that much paramount. So it's incumbent on us while here to learn deeply the experiences of China and the engagement in young people and the engagement in rural development, so that we have an idea of how we can advise other young people across Africa.
I see Pearl is in agreement. She's in a strong agreement there. Pearl, the China-Africa youth, why do you believe integration is possible, and what gaps can it fill in bringing the two sides closer?
Okay, I think from all the lessons I've learned during this visit and during this program, I think it's very evident that even if we have differences, we're still very similar. We've gone through very similar phases. A lot of the challenges and problems that we have as Africa, China has also experienced. So I don't think we're very different in that aspect. We might have some differences, but there's a lot of similarities. And I think those similarities are key to bringing us together. And I think wherever there's common ground and a level of mutual understanding and a level of similarity, I don't think integration is difficult at that stage. So once we have the same vision, we've got the same goal, we're looking towards the same direction, I think it's definitely possible for us, China and Africa, and the youths especially, to work together to meet these goals and meet our common goals and achieve a sustainable development that benefits both China and Africa.
Eric, do you believe integration is possible, and what gaps can it fill in?
Well, I strongly agree with her that we have a lot of similarities, commonalities. You know, some of the things that we are going through at the moment, China has already gone through them long time ago. So it's a phase that China is past. And that's why I was saying that trying to learn from China becomes something that is not really a huge challenge, as some may say it. And so integration is inevitable. We don't just want to cooperate, like, you know, I do my thing, you do your thing. We want to make sure that there is integration. When we say there is integration in terms of the policies that we are having, right? Look, I was very, very happy when I saw the FOCAC outcome document. It outlines that there is now the integration of the FOCAC outcomes or action plan and those policies that we are having on the continent,
right?
Institutions that we have in the continent, for example, PIDA on infrastructure development, that means that the projects that are coming from FOCAC through the FOCAC framework, they are being integrated with our continental infrastructure development framework. So that tells you that integration is something that is inevitable. It's something that we are supposed to take serious. So now that is the policy perspective of it. Culturally, I always argue with my Chinese friends to say that I think we have a lot of similarities in terms of our culture. Many African countries who always talk about Ubuntu, they will agree in Sane, Pearl, they will all agree with Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Ubuntu believes in a collective and not individualism. And this is the Chinese way of doing things. They also have a collective mentality. That's a similarity.
In the He culture.
In the He culture, it's also there. So now, that means that integration is not something really difficult, because we are saying, look, policy-wise, we are already moving towards that end.
Direction.
And then culturally, we almost have the same values, right? So now it's a matter of really us taking integration so serious. It's inevitable and it's important.
So the foundations are there in our cultures. The African culture of Ubuntu and He also forms a foundation for this. So it is possible. It's a matter of implementing these things to make it happen. Some of you in attendance are currently studying, working in China, and you've also just highlighted. I would like to know from you, how has this prepared you for this journey of being a future China-Africa leader? Maybe I'll start with Reginald.
Yes. You know, one of the unique things about studying here is that no one studies any program without being immersed into the Chinese culture. And this is where you will understand better how the people work. How things work in classroom and out of classroom. And as you begin to integrate outside, because there are a couple of trips that you'll take while you're studying. I came here for an MBA almost 8 years ago. So as you interact with people outside of classroom, you have to take keen interest in why do things work the way they do. And so you start making, it's inevitable, you'll start making comparisons with your country, and why does that work there? Why doesn't it work there? And so that broadens up your mind in a free environment while you're still studying, while your mind is open to learning. And so that becomes much more advantageous when you come here to study. And then you integrate either into a work environment or into business. And so some of as you end up doing a little bit of both with experience, you're studying and then you're trying to pursue a bit of business here, because the integration becomes that deep. And so it helps prepare you to interact with other young people other young Chinese, and other young African diaspora. Mm. We have a very huge diaspora in China. And so when you share this stuff with them that you learned outside, you see that it becomes an eye-opener. As you have seen here in Hubei, we met with other young Africans.
Yeah.
And as we exchange notes, we see that, okay, we are sort of pushing towards the same thing. It's a matter of sharing the same experiences that we bring from other places.
Let's hear from the working class here. Crow, you with the embassy of Zambia in Beijing, how has your experience, your work experience integrating with fellow Zambians and also with Chinese youth and learning about China, how has this prepared you for this journey of being a future China-Africa leader?
I think I've been in China slightly over a year now, and the warmth of the people, the accommodating nature, the way they are always willing to help has made my adjustment and settling in so much easier than I expected. Mm. I think it's somewhere that's very easy to live. It opens your mind to so many possibilities.
Which is what the youth wants.
Yes, yes, it gives you a lot of room for growth. It teaches you as an individual and as a professional, you learn so much. There's not a single day that I've been in China where I haven't learned something new.
Mm.
I'm always learning. I'm always improving myself just by being here. I think I've had the opportunity to go on a number of cultural visits. I've had the opportunity to just step out of my comfort zone and take a walk around Beijing. I think you agree with me that Beijing is still very cultural. It gives you the sense of I'm in China, and you get that whenever you go to a different city in China, and I'm always amused by this and I'm always amazed by this. There's always something different about it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of similarities, but there's also a lot of difference. There are cultures, and just the way they preserve that and make you feel like you want to be a part of it, I think makes your experience here so much better and easier to get into. And when it comes to preparing me as a future leader, I think just being more open-minded, seeing what lies ahead, the possibilities that are there for Zambia. I think Zambia and China are both considered developing countries. So looking at the possibilities that are there for my country, Zambia, looking at the possibilities that are there for Africa, and from just looking at how far China has grown and how much they've developed in the last 3 decades, I think is unprecedented. You don't see that anywhere else in the world. So for me, I think being here just as a leader, it shows me that if I take the steps and I'm willing to make the change as an African leader, it's definitely very possible to achieve.
Eric, I was listening to your speech at the closing ceremony, and also during your tour, you had discussions under Be Partners for Green Development, Be Partners for Development Cooperation, Be Partners for People-to-People and Cultural Exchanges. Moving forward, what were some of the outcomes of the discussions that you had?
Well, we had, I think, a wonderful trip. I think they all agree with me when I say that.
Yeah.
You know, these three topics, I think they were chosen properly because they really cover very critical issues on the continent at the moment. Point number one being the issue of green development. You know, most of our countries are natural resource dependent countries. That is, we have a lot of natural resources.
Yeah.
That is a fact. So now coming here, we've been seeing how it has been done in Hubei.
Yeah.
Remember, we visited Sinfa Group. They were really using the natural resources sustainably to produce a lot of product. That's value addition, which is something that is missing in a couple of our countries. But then how do you value aid sustainably and actually ensuring that there is a balance in development and environmental protection? We saw it there. So when we got to the Three Gorges University, we were having the engagement with African students who are at that university. They really shared. They are learning a lot of experiences in terms of green infrastructure.
Yeah.
I think there is hope that most of these African students who are studying here are going to be key drivers for economic development back in Africa, in their own countries. And then when we take a look at development cooperation, there is a point that I realized within this action plan when it comes to the development cooperation. It talks about even creation of some small but beautiful activities. Yes, 1,000 small but beautiful activities. I think this is where us as the young people should chip in, right? Mm-hmm. Besides those 1,000 small but beautiful activities, I think all of us here, Sunday can actually embark on something small yet beautiful. Mm-hmm. That means that we... Yeah, because entrepreneurship, someone who likes entrepreneurship, by the way, is an entrepreneur, if I could say. So those small projects that we are doing, we should actually take them seriously. This is one important message that I get from there. And I also got well impressed when I was looking at that outcome document, that it emphasized the role of entrepreneurship. So now we should actually take it serious. Now, coming back to the issue of people-to-people exchanges, being the third topic that we were focusing on, we were at Hubei University. We had that symposium or a workshop. And really hearing different African students and also Chinese students sharing their perspectives, it was really quite informative. One important takeaway that I have from that is that already China has seen that us as African young people have a critical role to play in shaping these relations. And so now see, there are a lot of Chinese young teachers who are going to the African continent, Confucius Institute. They are going to play a very important role in actually not only making sure that we learn the language, which is critical. Someone asked me, like, why should we learn Chinese language? And I said, we want these Chinese investors to come in numbers on the continent and explore the opportunities that are there. If we don't understand them.
Learning African languages.
Yes.
And one of the universities offers African languages here in China.
I know one of my good friends. Her name is Rudo. That's a Shona name.
Yes.
That's a Shona name. She's already teaching somewhere here in China. And she did studies in Zimbabwe, at the University of Zimbabwe. These are the people-to-people exchanges that we are talking about. So I think the takeaway is that these people-to-people exchanges are really critical. And us as young people, we really have a very important role to play in them. We shouldn't be waiting, folding our hands, then we say, okay, when someone mentions China-Africa cooperation, it's something huge. No, we are actually part and parcel of that.
Reginald had the opportunity of also visiting with you Shu Jiachong Village, exploring poverty alleviation and rural revitalization efforts in resettlement villages. Based on what you saw there, what were some of the things that you need to be thinking of now as youth for long-term rural development planning as African youth?
Thank you. That was precisely poignant visit for me, because there's something unique we share with that village. They were affected and became part of a water development project. If you know, Lesotho supplies South Africa with water, and that water comes from Lesotho Highlands Water Development Project, and we have built similar dams. And so we have had to deal with issues of resettlement of residents. We have had to deal with issues of compensation. In Lesotho, it was even more complex because there were burial sites that were going to be covered by the dam. There were farms, that you name it. We had a lot that we had to deal with just to get that project going. And so seeing that balance come through, like, when does development becomes a little bit too much for the residents, where they are, their cultural heritage. For us, it was a very hard issue to resolve. It still is a continuing issue here and there. We are now into phase two in Lesotho with a very good company from China that is helping us develop the Budihadi Dam. And so at this very moment, they are dealing with those same issues we dealt with when we are doing phase one. And so coming here and seeing how they managed to put such a huge project and emphasize the issue of putting the people there first, regardless of what development that would bring to the larger context, but ensuring that the humans involved are well taken care of and the culture is preserved. Yes, and we got that lesson pretty clear. I have read a number of publications around that. That village exemplifies an integration of a large infrastructure project and the residents. And the management that we visited there, they were clear. And the residents themselves whom we interacted with, they were very clear about how they're integrated with the project and how it has helped them develop their lives. There's a lot of local products cultivation. China has this digital commerce that is vibrant. And I was pretty excited to see that they have integrated their local produce into that. And so the project became part of the development of the economy. So you realize that the Three Gorges Dam that was built there actually ended up becoming a vital instrument in making sure that that community itself develops. And now there's tourism that has boomed. You have seen as everywhere we go, there were buses, droves of buses going there. That was a great lesson. And I think we take the same, especially with Pearl, because Lesotho and Zambia, we share the same thing. We have this Highlands Water Development Project. Yeah. And therefore, going to that village, seeing how they were integrated into the project and seeing how the local economy was revitalized, digitized, and the local tourism was integrated. And it's run by them. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who introduce you into the village. That these are critical lessons that we needed to have learned. And I was glad when we were told that our Deputy Prime Minister was also there. Oh. It shows how important this kind of integration with the rural community is, because it has to be people-centered.
Looking at China, what has impressed you the most regarding China's poverty alleviation strategy, and how can it be adapted to your own country?
Well, that's a topic of my interest. I've had a couple of years really trying to explore the lessons from China's poverty alleviation initiatives. You know, China has done, I would say, very marvelous job in alleviating a lot of people out of absolute poverty. So there are a lot of lessons that us as other developing countries can try to gather from that. Lesson number one, targeted alleviation. China's poverty alleviation has adopted this kind of a strategy whereby it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of a strategy. It's based on what do you have, what can you do. So you are a village that is very close to the Three Gorges Dam. What kind of resources do you have there? We cannot copy another village that is very far away. And so this is how China has been doing it. We went to Shanxi province, and with the first China Africa Future Leaders Dialogue, where we had the opportunity to walk around with the village cadets there, spending the whole day troubling them, asking a lot of questions. And we realized that they knew every angle of those villages. And even to tell you that in this household, they have two cats. To that extent, that means that they know what is happening within the village. So basically, they've spent much time trying to understand the situation that is within the village. What do villagers need? And what can we provide? What resources does the village have?
Let's do this. When we talk about it, you know, it sounds like something that just happened. So it's nice that you're witnessing it as a Zimbabwean. It wasn't one day thing that, okay, let's just alleviate poverty today.
It took a lot of work. I can tell you that the central government had to also send some young people to a lot of villages who are energetic, with equipped with resources and new ideas to those impoverished villages.
Pearl, what tools can you take from this program that you can apply now moving forward?
As someone who's very passionate about sustainable development, I think it's been very nice to see how Hubei has integrated all dimensions of sustainable development in every project that we've been to. I think you can see economic, social, and environmental development taken into consideration. I'll give you one specific example, I think, which has been ringing in my head. When you think about the tribe of the Three Gorges that we visited in Wenichang, I think it's a very good example of sustainable development in practice. Because when you look at it, even just on the surface, right, or in the simplest terms, you can see all three dimensions of development. You can see the economic aspect. They're using tourism to contribute to the Yes, they're using tourism to create jobs. They're using tourism to contribute to the economy as a province and as a country. I'm sure you saw how many people were there visiting that place. Yeah. That shows a level of economic development. If you look at the social aspect, I think they've taken cultural preservation and the protection of local cultures very seriously. Yeah. And the Tribe of the Three Gorges just kind of brings all of that together. You're able to experience local cultures, how they lived in the past, how they live now. You actually experience what the people of the Three Gorges are like. And that covers the social aspect of development. And when you look at the environmental aspect of it, it was very amusing to see how well the environment in that area has been protected. The place almost looks as if it was just taken out of a postcard. Yeah, yeah. Like it was taken off a postcard and just put there for you to see. Yeah. It's like almost picture perfect. And yeah, even just speaking to the guides and the people in the area, there's so many measures that they're putting into place to protect the local ecosystems. And for me, I think that was a major lesson for me as a Zambian, as an African as a whole, that when we're looking at development, I don't want to look at one specific project because there's so many projects we can take from this, right? But I think the main lesson for development for me is when we're looking at any developmental project, we should look at it from all three angles and make sure that whatever development that we're bringing to our countries is sustainable and it looks at it from every angle.
And just to wind up our discussion, Reginald, briefly tell us, moving forward, what would be your recommendations for future China-Africa cooperation among the youth?
I think we already sort of summed it up in what we said. We need to have even more learnings, exchange of people between young Africans and our Chinese compatriots here. That's one. Because development, as we said earlier, requires people, and Africa has people. If we can train as many young people as we can, that will be profound in making sure that these action plans from economic development, green development, to healthcare, there's quite a number of them. And interestingly, 2026 has been earmarked in this FOCAC as the year of technical and vocational education and training. That particular year, these two peoples are going to focus on exchanging and training as many talents as possible to make sure through Luban workshops and others. So that's one, exchanging people and then exchanging skills. And secondly, it is about learning about human-centered development. Back home, when we have large infrastructure projects, we conduct something called Environmental Impact Assessment, EIA. This approach, it's good, but it tells you that we are doing development from the perspective of, okay, let's build this dam, but figure out how much damage we will do, and then we mitigate. The approach in Hubei, and what I think is would be a strong recommendation moving forward in terms of this is, in terms of human-centered development, the development itself, as it is being planned, people who are there, the communities who are there, become part of the development.
Yeah.
We don't only just assess how will it impact them. No, they become part of the development. So you bring in the economic vehicle for the community along with the project. And so that's a very technical aspect that I believe needs to be learned so that when we implement these action plans, they become absorbed into the communities as part of lifting people out of poverty. So we can hit a bit more milestone with that. So it's just people to people exchanges, exchanging technical skills, and then the governance and development of these programs. And if young people are at the center of that, they're going to live much longer. And so these things will remain in policy books and in implementation for quite a long time with shared culture and common understanding and shared economic development.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that brings us to the end of the discussion. Pearl, Eric, and Reginald, thank you for sharing your insights and all the best in your future plans with China and Africa as the youth.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Listeners, to get the latest update and more discussions on China-Africa relations, you can subscribe to our online newsletter at CGTN or Substack, www.cgtn.org. cgtn.com/subscribe/newsletter.html or via substack.com/@ChinaAfricaTalk. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Thanks again. See you next time.